I think we have a call coming in. Caller, name in town?
Greg from Kerrville, James.
Hi, Greg. Talk to us.
Well, first of all, I wanted to make an apology. Last time I called in, I had my facts wrong. It wasn't $87 billion in oil subsidies. It's only about 8.7. So I was off by a factor of 10 on how much we subsidized the oil company.
Okay, just for grins. Help me remember the technique in the subsidy. Is it by breaks, or I've forgotten how that works?
There's a number of things. There's basically the oil depletion allowance, which I'm totally against.
Okay.
When I sell one of my assets, I don't get some kind of tax break for selling it.
Okay.
I usually have to pay money on what I get. And the other thing is the royalties that they're supposed to be paying for drilling in national parks and stuff like that. A lot of the royalties are just being, forgiven. I'm not really sure what the term is, but that kind of bugs me, that they're using our oil, sucking it out of our public land, and then the administration is kind of giving a tax break on it and selling it less than market value. Now, but back to Iran. I'm glad you brought that one up, Jane. If I remember correctly, I know somebody that sold weapons of mass destruction to Iran.
Yeah, didn't we?
Illegally, under the table. Remember who that was? What party was behind the Iran-Contra thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, there you go. Ronald Reagan was giving weapons of mass destruction to Iran, funded by the Contras, through Oliver North and Poindexter and all those guys.
Yes.
So you're saying the GOP has a better plan for Iran than they did under Reagan? I mean, we armed them with Reagan's plan on with Iran, give them weapons under the table. Why? Because the American public don't want to do that. We don't want to give terrorist nations weapons. But that's what Ronald Reagan did. And he had to fund it through the Contras, who were selling tons of drugs, to make it happen. Now, that was the GOP policy for Iran under Reagan.
What is it?
Did it work, James?
What is it now?
God, we don't have one.
Well, what's it going to be? What's it going to be if this guy...
We don't have one right now.
Ahmadinejad, when he gets his first nuclear weapon and puts it on the nose of that ICBM or whatever it is that he just bought from South Korea or wherever he bought it. I had that yesterday or last week.
Right.
What's our policy going to be then?
Well, I mean, it just sounds like, basically Ronald Reagan was coddling these terrorists back then. And everybody seems to forget the pictures of Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam. Why was he shaking hands with Saddam? Because we wanted him to go kick Iran's butt because, our little boy, the Shah, got kicked out. And that's when Saddam was our buddies. That's when we were giving him weapons of mass destruction, including biological weapons that he used against the Kurds. We know he had those weapons. We sold them to him. We got the receipt. So that's how we've been dealing with Iran.
Well said.
The hell out of the Iran people.
Well said.
Have to look at where Iran is. It's sitting on the third largest oil reserves. And I tell you what, where the second largest oil reserves are? They're in Canada. I'd be real scared if I was a Canadian right now.
Good point. Well done.
Whoa, they're really close.
Yes.
Our lines of supply to the front lines are not too long.
Now, I don't have this in front of me, but I have in the past. Where does Mexico in that number? Like, if Iran was three
I don't know, but they're pretty high, I think.
And Canada was what, second?
Number two. Yeah, I didn't know that. The Saudis are number one.
Yeah.
The Canadians are number two.
Right, and then Iran.
Yeah,
but Mexico was pretty high, wasn't it?
Yeah, they're like the top ten for sure.
Yeah.
I think Venezuela is like number four.
Yes.
Mexico's way up there.
Yes.
They're right below us, so I imagine they'd be a little concerned, too.
Now, we need to, the next time I find that in the Washington Times or in the Wall Street Journal, I need to clip that and save it so that we can refer to that, because that's a good piece of information.
And another thing you brought up the other day that got me to thinking, you were saying, you kind of hated to admit it, but it seems like our government works best, like you were saying, the Republicans get up and act like real Republicans when there's a Democratic president.
And
vice versa. And I was going, I have to hand it to our founding fathers. That's kind of the way they planned it, that there would be, checks and balances between the different branches of government. And there could be debate and stuff instead of everything being rubber-stamped by caveat by one party.
Yeah.
It does work best when there's a multitude of political opinion out there, empowered.
That Bill Clinton would never have signed the welfare reform bill had it not been that he was pretty much forced into that.
Well, the budget constraints of Graham... Now, see, that's what I'm wondering. Why are the budget restraints of Graham Rudman enforced on Bill Clinton and not on George Bush. I would have to blame a Republican Congress for that.
Well, yeah.
Why aren't the same constraints put on George Bush?
True. Now, however, one of the first, and I know this is old because it's 10 years ago, the first or second executive order that Bill Clinton signed was the suspension of Graham Rudman.
Well, golly, I mean, he's still abided by it.
Well, the Republican...
first thing that George Bush signed off was the suspension of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Well, I mean, you know, James, I mean, it is not, you know, this is not the country I was raised in.
That's good.
It's not the country I was raised in. The country I was raised in, you couldn't come. This is legal under the Patriot Act. You couldn't come to somebody's house in the middle of the night, kick the door in, throw a black bag over their head, run them off in handcuffs to someplace in Eastern Europe, render them, which is a good word for torture them, and you don't have to give them access to an attorney. You don't have to tell anybody you did it. And this is something you can do to a U.S. citizen without a warrant. That's not the country I was brought up in. The kind of country those things occurred in, my father fought in World War II against. And I think it's just really a horrible thing that something like the Patriot Act, you know, if you don't support, you're unpatriotic. Well, I mean, there was an anthrax scare. It was right after 9/11. You know, I could see that little haste into maybe enacting something a little over the top. Well, we've been over the top right now. Somehow we contain communism, we contain Hitler, without taking the average rights of American citizens and throwing them out to something. We battled the whole world and won, leaving the Bill of Rights intact. Why can't we do it now?
That's a good question. And see, you can even say, look, we even put people on the moon a long time ago, and we can't solve some of these close-to-home issues.
You're absolutely right, James. You
know, yeah. No, I hear you. Greg, I don't know why, but it is, in my opinion, screwy that when you have the Republicans in charge of the House, the Senate, and the White House, that we can't have cut spending, cut programs, cut departments, cut agencies, and reduced the federal budget by... you know, maybe $750 billion so that each year the tax revenue exceeded the budget by, you know, half a trillion, and then we could pay down the debt and do some other stuff locally. But we're going to do a budget this year, I believe it, $2.8 trillion, knowing full well that the tax revenue may only be $2.25 trillion.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we're in the largest deficit spending of all time.
This is stupid.
I agree. You couldn't get
insanity.
But what bothers me most is where the money's being directed. We're building this huge deficit, and you know, God knows what the national debt will be in 10 years. But what are we doing it for? We're doing it on a war that we didn't have to go to. We're doing it giving a tax cut to people that don't need them.
Well, that we can't comment it that way because need doesn't necessarily come into play when you do a tax cut.
Say we go back to Iran and we go to the UN and we say, okay, bottom line, Iran, we're going to contain you. There's a boycott against you. You're not going to get cell phones. You're not going to get colored TVs. You're not going to get anything from anybody that trades with the U.S., period. Total trade embargo. Well, give the Iranians about 6 months without cell phones and colored TVs, and we can move toward changing that government.
I'm with you.
Using our economic might.
I'm with you, and I think we need to try all of the means that we can quickly.
Now, unfortunately, you know, the scariest part about that is we probably have to put an embargo against Iranian oil. And what would that do at our pumps?
Well,
so there's a lot of tricky stuff there.
Right.
Do we want Iran taken down without a single drop of blood if it costs $6 a gallon?
That's a good question.
You know, so there's some trade-offs.
If we did that and let the Democrats claim some credit for working the way they like meetings and they like debate and dialogue and discussion and they like continued meetings.
They do it in public, unlike the GOP.
And then would that mean we'd be able to drill an ANWR maybe if it was at $6 a gallon?
I don't know. That'll be, you know, the political pressures will bring that on.
That's a good point.
For instance, you know, when I think of ANWR, I just, every time I hear ANWR, I think of Exxon Valdez.
Yeah.
You know, they're still cleaning up the goop up there from that.
Yes, yes.
You know, so yes. I think it's in the oil industry's best interest to maybe figure out some safer ways of transporting this stuff.
I think that's reasonable.
But they're not making investment in new drilling technologies because they know we're peak oil. Any investment they make now, they will never recoup because we're talking, you know, if you could get past the environmental laws, it's going to cost you billions of dollars to build a refinery. And that refinery is going to have a very short life. It's not going to be like these things they've been amortizing over 40 years. Hummel and you know, back down on the Gulf Coast.
Right.
You know, they've had the environmentalists keep them from expanding, and even now the capital expenditure is probably prohibitive when they look at the return on investment because there's no oil out there 20 years from now. They're not going to get that return on the refineries they built back in the 60s.
That is an excellent insight.
You know, so...
And it's factual and accurate.
These guys are into power, they're into control, and I would think it would be in their best interest to figure out how they're going to do it without oil. How are they going to retain their political power? How are they going to retain their economic power globally when the oil's gone? So I would think it would be in the best interest of the energy companies to be pedal to the metal in research on alternative energy, because they've still got the pipeline, they still got the infrastructure to whatever the alternative is. And I would think they'd want to lose control of that. It might even be, heaven forbid, more profitable.
That's the truth. Hey,
that's a
good point. That's an excellent point. All right, Greg, that's all the time we've got for this segment. Hey, I appreciate
your
call. I appreciate your input.
I appreciate your voice, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
From Kerrville, I appreciate that call. Greg's a bright guy, has great insight, and did a good job today. We're going to go to break and be back in just a minute. Hello, Will.